And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, I am jumping the number two of the triple dipper now. We're going to carry this one through to the next hour, I can guarantee you. What is happening in Iran right now is, it's encouraging from the outside. On the inside, the Iranian media, which shills for the Iranian regime, is like, they don't know what to do with this. Do we report it? We can't report that. We'll be sent to the gulag. We'll never come back. I'm just going to tell you, what's happening right now in Iran has not been seen to this level. I mean, the last time we had major protests was 2019. They had gas protests when the government decided it could no longer afford to do fuel subsidies. Basically, they were subsidizing the cost of fuel for people to go to the gas station. Basically, you got a major discount, or it was something that you could afford more because the government subsidized it. Well, the government couldn't keep that up, not with sanctions. And so it went away and the people rioted. But not like this. This is like on par with when the Iranian revolution took place in 78, 79, I believe. And it changed the dynamic of the Middle East. I don't know if it's going to get that far. But if, keep in mind what happened in Libya. We've got Muammar Gaddafi is gone. Remember the riots? Okay, there's that. Remember what happened? And those of you who were early in the war in Iraq, you remember what happened? We had the invasion. Saddam had his thumb down on everything in the country. But as soon as the people had a moment to breathe fresh air, they rioted themselves and burned their own buildings. There's a great deal of simmering unrest in the Middle East. And what's happening in Iran right now is catching the attention of people. And Iran is doing all it can to suppress the message and not let it get out that this is actually happening. Well, it is happening. And it's happening because of something called the morality police. This is real, all right? The morality police. So all of this started, by the way, just in the last week or so, with the death of a young lady named Mahsa Amini. And Mahsa Amini was arrested because allegedly her hijab, you know, the head covering that is traditional in the Middle East, that her hijab was not being worn correctly. Go figure. And it brought Iran's morality police to arrest her, basically. And they took 22-year-old Mahsa Amini in Tehran into custody for wearing what they deemed to be inappropriate clothing, took her to a police station. We don't know exactly what happened there. All we know is she was in a coma soon thereafter and died. And her death has now sparked widespread anger, according to the article I'm looking at here from DW.com. The title of it is Iran's Morality Police. What do they enforce? The headline here is September 23rd, just 4 days ago. So what is the morality police in Iran? That's one of the underlying things you got to understand. First of all, the flashpoint here is the death of Mahsa Amini. But the long simmering discontent has been brewing in part because of the regime's morality police. Well, first of all, they're real. They're not just like this thing like there are men who go out and they just rough up women and they get away with it. No. This is an official organization. It's known as the Gasht-e-Irshad. Gasht-e-Irshad, which translates to mean the guidance patrols. The people constantly call it the morality police. It's a unit of Iran's police forces tasked with enforcing the laws on Islamic dress codes in public. And according to the regulations, all women above the age of puberty, although the age is kind of hard to figure, all women above the age of puberty must wear a head covering and loose clothing when they're in public. There's no clear guidelines about, you know, what constitutes appropriate clothing. Sometimes that leaves it up for the subjectivity of the particular officer of the morality police. And then those who are detained, they're sometimes given a notice, but in a lot of cases, they're arrested. They're taken to a so-called education and advice center in a police station where they're required to attend a mandatory lecture on the hijab and Islamic values. And then they have to call someone, a male, I'm sure, to bring them appropriate clothes so they can be released. In this case, we don't know what happened with Mahsa Amini. I saw a picture of her. She looked like she was a beautiful young lady, 22 years old, and she died as a result of being detained by the morality police. Well, under the new president, I say new, he's not too new, Ibrahim Raisi, the president of Iran, He's an ultra-conservative, which in Muslim orthodoxy, an ultra-conservative is like, wow, all right? This is not like saying you're a solid conservative and just plain right. No, it's not like saying you're a conservative in American politics. When you're an ultra-orthodox conservative, right-wing extremist in the Muslim faith, you are beating women for not having their hijabs on correctly, all right? Under his administration, Raisi's administration, the morality police has increased its presence in big cities. In response, it says thousands of women have begun to go out in the streets without a headscarf and try to share videos of themselves online to encourage others to do so. And this is their way of fighting back. Can you imagine? Can you imagine fighting back as letting your hair be seen? Can you imagine? But yeah, Raisi's government, it says, is grappling now with the serious problems of the staggeringly high inflation, heavy international sanctions, water crisis, regional tensions, and public discontent is now skyrocketing. We are looking at a powder keg in the Middle East, in Tehran. So there's that. And I'll tell you, too, a separate story from CNN about the morality police. It says that literally she was dead within a few days. Masa Amini was. And it's a quote here from Human Rights Watch. Says it would be hard to find an average Iranian woman or an average family who does not have a story of an interaction with the morality police and their re-education centers. That's how present they are right now in Iranian society. So, folks, can you imagine? I mean, we get mad at isolated instances. We get mad at things, which I'll talk about later, the double standards of seeing, you know, an FBI raid on the house of a guy who was nothing but an abortion protester. Wow. In the meantime, there are places in the world where things like what I'm describing happen on a daily basis, where women are beaten sometimes in the streets for daring to have their hijab on incorrectly. And right now in Tehran, it's a flashpoint, man. And it's not likely to get over with anytime soon. AP News has a story dated yesterday. It says, analysis, latest Iran protests are likely not the last for Tehran. And we're only getting glimpses because they keep shutting down the internet. But it says, only glimpses of videos that make it online show the protests that are convulsing Iran over the death of a 22-year-old woman who had been detained by the nation's morality police. But those flashes are showing that public anger across the country, only once simmering, is now boiling. It says it's just the latest cycle of unrest to grip Iran since its 79 Islamic revolution. Protests have now spread. Get this. Protests have now spread to over 46 Iranian cities, towns, and villages. State TV is now admitting that at least 41 protesters and police have been killed since the protest began. One AP count of official statements by authorities puts the death toll at least 13, and more than 1,200 demonstrators have been arrested nationwide. This is happening as I speak. It says the Iranian government has dismissed the latest protests as a foreign plot rather than an expression of public outrage. Okay, you can go ahead and try that if you want to, but your people know different. I mean, literally the Iranian government is trying to say, there are American mercenaries fighting our religion here on our streets. No. No, they're not. This is literally your people sick of being subjugated. Tyranny can only go so far. All right, folks, I got more on this. Freedom fighters in Iran. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Local, state, the national, man, even the international. We cover down on all the issues. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. So, yeah, hour number three. How's that possible, Boomer?
Man, I honestly, I was thinking it was hour number two, and then I looked up. I was like, oh, wait.
I know.
Actually, hour number three.
It doesn't seem natural, but no. It's been a good show. It's been full. Hey, we just got a text. I got to take issue with Donna from Coleman. She says, morality police, that's not much different from the abortion laws in some of these red states. Case in point, she says, Alabama's abortion law should be repealed. Doctors that treat pregnant women have no idea what they can legally treat or not, so they leave the profession altogether to avoid being criminalized by ambiguous laws. So first of all, Donna, you're conflating the issues, all right? The morality police in Iran that beat women in the streets because they're not wearing headgear is not the same thing as a state having a sovereign right, according to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, to enact laws that it believes are in the best interest of its citizens through a legislative process. So there's that. Secondly, any doctor in Alabama who is leaving his or her profession because they can't figure out the laws is not near as smart as the degree on their wall says they are, period. And thirdly, I'll just go ahead and say the idea that a state would say, we don't want to kill babies here, somehow means they've entered into the morality police. Well, no. We have a sovereign right, like I said, under the Constitution, to enact laws at the state that we believe are in the best interest and fall within line with what the citizens of the state want. You may or may not be aware, a few years ago when I was in the legislature, we floated a piece of legislation that allowed for the people of the state to vote whether or not they want to embed into our state constitution that we are there is no right to an abortion in Alabama. And the people overwhelmingly supported it. So it's not even just, oh, there's a few politicians down there making morality police decisions. No, it was brought to the polls, and the people of this state overwhelmingly said, we don't want to be an abortion state. So, Donna, I appreciate your input, but I do not agree with it, and I don't think it's on, you know, the same track as what we're talking about with what's going on in Iran. You had a caller a minute ago, Boomer. What was the deal, man? Somebody left a question?
Yeah. Somebody was talking about, like, do you think there are going to be other flashpoints in other places of the world? That's kind of what's going on in Iran. Like,
oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think there already are.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess the question would be what kind of flashpoints would I foresee or what kind of things do people look for as flashpoints?
Yeah. What do you foresee? And then let's go with that. What do you see?
So I'll be honest with you. First of all, like what we're seeing in Iran right now did not happen overnight. It's a flashpoint, meaning that, bam, something lit the fuse.
Mm-hmm.
But the fuse had to be set before that. It's a powder keg waiting for someone to light the fuse. And so you got this swirling of events that constantly happens, simmering undercurrents of tension. And in Iran, the single flashpoint was that everybody became enraged over the death of this young lady because she didn't have her headgear on correctly. There's no excuse for that. Anywhere in the world, there's no excuse for that. Mm. So first thing I would say is you look and see what's happening in a society and you'll recognize undercurrents that become tensions that then arise and like break through to the surface when that flashpoint hits. All right, that being said, what kind of flashpoints would I see? First of all, tyranny can only go so far anywhere. And sometimes it lasts longer. Saddam Hussein was in his position for 30 years, I believe, 35 years. Gaddafi was in his position for, I want to say, 40 or more. You've got despots, and then you've got some like North Korea. Now, North Korea is unique because North Korea has almost become cultish in its blind allegiance to the dear leader because they have been so suppressed, so oppressed for, you know, now an entire generation plus, that they don't understand life outside of North Korea. Actually, South Korea even has an entire governmental department whose sole purpose is to try and help the occasional North Korean defector to adapt to and understand Western life because it's so alien. It's like coming off the moon to Earth. It's that.
Wow.
I go back again to a book that's on our rightsideradio.org website. It's called Escape from Camp 14. It's about a North Korean defector and what it was like for him to come to the West, literally growing up in a place where he didn't even understand that it was okay to eat meat for meals because that was something that they couldn't have. But other flashpoints I can see around the world, let me just say that I think there's some out there. So there's some in the Western world. I think, first of all, draconian measures like what you're seeing in Canada and some we saw even in Australia and New Zealand, those are not going to be able to be repeated. The next pandemic is going to be met with a swift resistance from a population that's going to say, by God, no. You're not separating me from my family. Granny's not going to die in the nursing home by herself. I'm not doing that anymore. You can't shut down my business. I would not be a bit surprised to say that even in the United States, you will not see the ability of a government to shut things down like it did, unless it's so apparent that we can literally see the results of not shutting down.
Right.
But in the world of oppressed citizenry, I think you're going to see places like where are we seeing major unrest right now? Is it Venezuela, I believe, is one. And then you've got China has its own undercurrents. It's got an entire segment of society that it's trying to oppress right now. It's causing some trouble, especially in Western China.
Right. I actually was thinking about China because of that.
Yeah. And I can't say they can overthrow the Chinese government, but they can become so separatist that the Chinese government finally leaves a section of that country alone. We got the Kurds. The Iraqi government hated the Kurds. They're an ethnic minority. Mm. But the Kurds were actually better at running government than the Iraqis were. It was ridiculous. I used to meet Iraqis on the street in Baghdad who told me that when they went on vacation, they went to Kurdistan in the north because it was so peaceful and so nice. And yet they are just devalued. And so how did that work out? Well, the Kurds resisted, and now the Kurds are often seen as our allies in the Middle East. So you asked me a question. I'm off on a tear right now, brother.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense in my eyes. I mean, everything you were just saying, that's very eye-opening as well to me. I mean, I didn't know any of that.
Jumping back on my topic. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Whoever called in for the question, appreciate you. Listen. CNN.com regarding Iran. CNN.com reporting a fifth Iranian paramilitary member has been killed as president warns protesters will be dealt with decisively. All right, this story came out 2 days ago. This is not just, by the way, now a situation where they're pushing back against the morality police. When you've got members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps being killed, that's the elite. That's the SS of Iran. All right, that's the Praetorian Guard of ancient Rome. All right, it says a fifth member of an Iranian volunteer paramilitary group died Sunday after clashing with what state media called rioters and thugs as the country's president Ibrahim Raisi warned that protesters will be dealt with decisively after days of nationwide unrest. The person died from injuries on Thursday in Urmia, a city in northwest Iran, Iranian state news agency IRNA said. All right, they're admitting it. They're admitting it, but they're also trying to play it up as he was the victim. I got news. He probably wasn't the victim. It was probably a crowd that turned on him because of something he was doing. It says at least 35 people have died in Iran in recent protests over the death of the young lady who I talked to you about, Mahsa Amini, the 22-year-old. Oh, she was Kurdish, too. I didn't realize that. 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman. It also says in this article from CNN, Iranian authorities say they will restrict internet access in the country until calm is restored in the streets. In other words, here's the other piece. Boomer, back to that question we were talking about a minute ago. The thing that will help also spark these flashpoints is the ability of the people to communicate and realize they're not alone. Because when I guarantee you, if this had happened 20, 30 years ago, before the internet was as big as it is right now, and Mahsa Amini had been killed by the morality police then, it wouldn't have hardly gotten out. People wouldn't have known. It would have been a rumor of a young lady in another city that something happened to.
Wow.
But the internet gave them the ability through social media to get the story out far and wide, and people began to riot in the streets within 24 hours. in all points around the country. Well, that's why the regime is shutting down the internet.
Oh, wow.
They don't want people communicating. And they don't want the word getting to the outside world because what? It means more sanctions. It means more international condemnation. And so, yeah, that's a big deal. In fact, where's that story? Tell you what, when I get back, I'll tell you what, let's do this. We're take a break. When we get back, I'll tell you, Elon Musk is jumping into the fray. Elon Musk jumping into the fray.
Wow. Okay.
With Iran freedom fighters, giving them a boost. I'll tell you what that means.
All right.
And what's the U.S. doing? Actually, maybe some sanctions on the morality police themselves. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More where that came from. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. Was that, hey, Boomer, when we had Ted Nugent on, at one point he picked up his guitar, and I think he was, it was a time when he was fussing. It may not have been the actual broadcast because we were during breaks, we would talk and joke. And
doing a riff on the guitar?
Yeah, and he grabbed, at one point, I think you played an Aerosmith outro, and he goes, Boomer, you blankety blank, what are you playing an Aerosmith for when you got Ted Nugent on the air? Yeah. And he picked up his guitar, and he said, how about this? And he started, yes. Was it Cat Scratch Fever he played? Or was it Stranglehold?
I think it was Stranglehold.
Oh, was it Stranglehold?
I think it was Stranglehold. It may actually be on the video. I'll have to go back and look.
Why? It better be.
No, the... Well, I meant during the show, yes, but, you know, some of our afterlives.
Yeah, we get great guests on this show. We get great guests. So we had Ted Nugent. If you want to go back into our podcast archives, Ted Nugent was August 4th, I believe. A few weeks ago, we had retired Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, who wrote the book Dereliction of Duty. He was the guy who carried the nuclear football for Clinton for 2 years, and when Clinton lost the nuclear codes. Oh, my gosh, that's a great book. But, yeah, Buzz Patterson was on. This coming Friday, we've got Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, one of the founding members of Delta Force, who wrote his book Never Surrender and is constantly on Fox News and other national broadcasts as a not just a military analyst, but also he works for the Family Research Council now. He speaks to cultural issues and on matters of faith. Just an amazing man. And then we get all kinds of politicos. We had Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth here in studio a few weeks ago. Tomorrow we're going to have Congressman Robert Adderholt on the show. I expect Katie Britt will be on sometime soon. We've had other congressional candidates and congressmen themselves. It's just great, and it's every once in a while I got to pinch myself and figure, you know, and wonder how this happened. But yeah. All right. Hey, listen. Have I got a caller, Boomer? I do. I didn't even have my screen up where I could see it. Maybe I should look at the screen so I know what's happening on the show. Yeah, let me grab line one real quick. Is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville. Brian, how are you today?
I'm mighty fine, and that's the inverse. You're not supposed to look at the screen when you're in the car. You're supposed to look up to where you can see what's going on.
Yeah, you don't look at the screen, bud. We'll look at the screen. You keep driving.
But beyond that, I was thinking before the Revolutionary War, the British, as far as the dissent, so to say, they clobbered printing presses. And that was one of the things that, and that's one of the things that the First Amendment came out to be, the freedom of the press. So it's just a new way of doing the old school, blocking people's ability to communicate.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And yeah, there also probably wasn't a carrier pigeon left in the colonies. But you're right.
Certainly not passenger pigeons, but anyway.
Yeah, true enough.
Y'all have a great day.
You too, Brian. Appreciate you, as always. Let's see here what I got. No, Boomer, we're not. No, we're going to keep moving forward. Listen, back on my topic to kind of move this thing forward and wrap it up. The U.S., according to CNBC, a couple of days ago, has now put sanctions on Iran's morality police, accusing that unit of abusing women. Well, yeah, it abuses women. That's what it exists for. And Boomer, tell folks, my caller, that I've got to go forward with the show. I appreciate it. The U.S. on Thursday imposed sanctions on Iran's morality police over allegations of abuse of Iranian women, saying that it held the unit responsible for the death of a 22-year-old. Now, I don't know what assets the U.S. Treasury Department can access, because it says the U.S. Treasury Department also accused the morality police. So allegedly, they believe that they've got some assets they can touch or freeze or do something to that are related to the Iran's morality police. Secretary of State Antony Blinken even addressed this flat out. And here's what the deal is. This is not just, well, why is the Secretary of State addressing the morality police? No, what he's doing is he's showing solidarity with the people. The word will get to the people on the street that the Secretary of State, speaking on behalf of the U.S. government, has taken a stand against the morality police. And it may mean nothing in terms of actual sanctions. What it means to the people on the street, though, is someone sees what's happening. Someone knows, and they're saying something about it. Well, Iran continues to try and, you know, shut down dissent, is trying to make it hard for them to communicate with each other, making it hard to organize their protests, and making it hard to get the word to the outside. So what's Elon Musk do? He's doing exactly what he did in Ukraine. Elon Musk, according to Fortune magazine, dated yesterday. Elon Musk says he's activating the Starlink satellite internet capability in Iran as its government is blocking the internet to stop spreading protests. Elon Musk says he would activate his Starlink internet satellite service in Iran in response to news. The U.S. Treasury will also grant special permission for companies to provide internet services to the country. In other words, there's a sanction, by the way, against doing business with Iran. But they're saying, hey, technology-based companies, if you can get in there and give them internet service, go for it. We will not sanction you. And Elon Musk jumped right on it. Musk says he's going to activate Starlink to Iran in a reply to Blinken's tweet. Musk first suggested he wanted a sanctions exemption for Starlink. I'm pretty sure he's got it. And Starlink is not the only service trying to restore internet access there. Signal, the app who's, you know, where you can communicate by app and it can, you know, not be traced, that's been blocked in Iran since January. So they're setting up proxy servers trying to give folks access to Signal. So that's, to me, that's very cool. And it's interesting to me that the capability exists now. I mean, it used to be back in the day we had Radio Free America. We would broadcast from an outside into the country. And somebody with a microphone would be sitting there saying encouraging words. Hang in there, you know. There's a free world out there. Well, now, if the people can talk amongst themselves, that's probably even more effective. And so the internet being what it is, and Elon Musk having the assets he does, we now have Starlink getting put up over Iran to help these protesters communicate amongst themselves, organize their protests, and get the word out to the outside world. All right, folks, keep your eyes on the prize, because what's happening in other places sometimes matters. This is a big deal in a nuclear Middle East. Iran protests, freedom fighters in Iran. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Hey, we're going to hit number 3 of the Triple Dipper. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.